Blog Talk Radio.
Many people regard you as a personification of Ubuntu. What do you understand Ubuntu to be?
In the old days, when we were young, a traveler through a country would stop at a village and he didn't have to ask for food or for water. Once he stops, the people give him food, entertain him. That is one aspect of Ubuntu, but it will have various aspects. Ubuntu does not mean that people should not enrich themselves. The question, therefore, is, are you going to do so in order to enable the community around you to be able to improve? These are the important things in life, and if one can do that, you have done something very important which will be appreciated.
This is the Open Source Report on the 8th of February 2015, our first open source report, I believe, of this year. I'm not at all certain about that right now, but I'll have to check. But nonetheless, we are moving along. One of the things we are doing this year a bit more than last year is emphasizing security. Security being one of the benchmarks and always has been the benchmark of Linux. And now with the cloud where Linux runs supreme, security becomes even more so. But also we're looking at other types of open source devices. Medical devices come in, and various other types of open source hardware. So we are changing a few things around here, and we shall continue to. It's an evolving program. Thus, we would like to, as they say, greet everyone with a Happy New Year. Seems a bit odd in February, but better late than never. MA here at Cranston Software, and let's get on with the program. We're now at kernel 3.18.6. I've updated my kernel using Slackware 64, one of the latest editions of Slackware 14 plus. And there have been some additions to it. We've got Audacity going in it and several other programs. And we've completely redid our server, moving it to a much fastest server now using a 4-core server, which is a little bit different than what we had at one time, which would seem a bit odd for some. Let's move to wearables, and wearables are becoming an increasing part of what is going on in, especially in the Android world. We have Google and Google Glasses, etc., but there are other things there also. So we look at wearables. Are wearables just a fad? This particular article is at opensource.com. The future of devices for health is not wearables, it says. And it's kind of interesting here, talking about these various tractable devices. But the pros of wearable tech have been definitely worked out. And he gives an example of the Polar heart rate monitor a few years ago. Made a difference evidently in his life and various other monitoring devices. In fact, I saw a guy the other day wired up the electrodes in his head, etc., and then saw him a few days ago, and they were out and the hair had grown back, I think all in about 2 or 3 weeks. But these wearables are coming out, and even Google Glass in the healthcare arena, they are there. Pulse Check is a wearable bracelet created with open source, and this is where we come in, open source hardware that monitors your electrocardiogram. You'll see a picture of it on our marquee there. The pros of the anti-wearable tech, the author, let's get his name in here, Hugo Salver. Anyway, we didn't want to admit that. He goes on to say, I believe that as consumers, we generally tend to value particularly and peace of mind more than anything else. So let's face it, if you're using a device, is too much trouble or a big change to our otherwise easygoing routines, chances are it will end up lying around. This holds true for health and self-tracking as other things there. It's where the anti-wearables, as MIT scholar and entrepreneur David Rose more generally refers to as enhanced objects, that make the difference. Anti-wearables are all about embedding health and self-tracking devices into the surrounding environment, rather than the body of the user. And these are some of the devices here for contactless heart rate measurements include recent ones by Philips, and a keyboard that continuously monitors EKG of the user. That's developed by Cardio D, a startup company based out of Lisbon, Portugal. A car seat for heart rate and respiratory monitoring, and developed by the center IBV together with a biomedical engineering company, Pulix, and other partners there. Well, one of the two I looked at, a team from Dio Tano recently completed a series of anti-wearables biohacking project that resulted in things like a bicycle handlebar filled with a three-axis accelerometer and electrocardiogram sensor. The electrocardiogram sensor leads are connected to the conductive textile electrodes on the left and right grip of the handlebar. Whenever the rider holds a grip with his or her hand, the data is streamed via Bluetooth to a smartphone that shows the heart rate. So there are many, many things out here, and we'll have a link on there for that particular outfit. And the long and short, both have a place in our lives. This is the wearables versus anti-wearables, jogging and not. And then we get back to big data, which we've talked about several times. Now, these projects, BioTangno and OpenBCI and others, are contributing to get this expertise out of the hands of a few medical device makers. And this is where it comes into our presentation here as open source. And we'll put links to both of these projects here, to empower hundreds of creators and enthusiastic makers and developers around the world. Now, the OpenBCI, we'll take a quick look at it, is a number of boards that they offer. It's what we do. OpenBCI stands for Open Source Brain Computer Interface. The OpenBCI board is a virtual versatile, an affordable analog to digital converter that can be used to sample electrical brain activity, EEG, and muscle activity, EMG, heart rate, EKG, and more. It is compatible with any electrode and is supported by an ever-growing open-source framework of signal processing applications. And who we are, they are a community. This is of engineers, artists, scientists, designers, makers, and more. One thing we all have in common, we share an unflattering passion for harnessing the electrical signals of the human brain and body to further understand and explain who we are. Our community continues to grow, and so do the possibilities of what we can discover and create and what we can build together. In other words, collective effort. Why we do it. The biggest challenge we face in understanding what makes us who we are cannot be solved by a company, an institution, or even an entire field of science. We believe these discoveries will only be made through an open form of shared knowledge and concerted effort by people from a variety of disciplines, or was interdisciplined approach. Our vision is to realize the potential of the open source movement and to accelerate innovation in brain science. So there are a number of people that also sponsor them, the Fast Company, Y, Forbes, VentureBeat, just to name a few, and you'll see the link to their website. And they have a store here where there are a number of OpenBCI boards that you can purchase there. They have an open BCI 8-bit board, a kit. And let's see, what's that for? About $450. And they have an open 32-bit board kit, another one compatible there. It's called a chip kit. And that's about $450 also. And they also have an open BCI 16 channel research and development kit for about $800. And they have an open BCI electrode starter kit for about $40. You get your t-shirt for $25. But one of those actually were already sold out. But to get started in this type of endeavor, it is one of those situations that it's not the cheapest, but if you can get in for under $500, it is a bargain if you plan to do that sort of thing. And they have some downloadables here, too. They also, I would think, at GitHub. Now, here you can download the latest. The Raspberry Pi is in the news also for gamers, emulators on the Raspberry Pi 2. More games there, won't get into those. To the old Raspberry Pi, at least not at this juncture. We will, however, get into rapid open hardware innovations to redefine wireless. One of the other things we've been championing, especially open wireless, our municipal type of wireless. We've looked at this all the way from Afghanistan to Mexico, across various U.S. cities, in Australia. And you can find some of that information on our Facebook page at Cranston Software, or our Twitter feed at Cranston Software. If you look that up, you'll find that. I'm just getting a little bit of this. So hardware design and development traditions have been shrouded in secret companies desperate to keep their designs for internal use only. But in a world where sharing and transparency has become the norm and global collaborative development is no longer yet a phrase by marketers. And that's where the propaganda catches up with the reality. Hardware engineers need to take the same open source path as software to enable rapid innovation and progress. But this will only be possible when engineers aren't wasting time reinventing the wheel. Through open source was initially described as a software whose source code is open to the public. The source code is actually what the program is based upon. To use it since has evolved to strive a set of values and apply to both software and hardware. Open source tools and their development methodologies have played a critical role in hardware and software engineering in this evolution. These tools have often offer possibilities and opportunities that proprietary and commercial off-the-shelf options can rarely compete with. And this has been the advantage of open source from the very beginning. Supported by diverse and highly active community, open source offers an incredible an array of benefits from flexibility, scalability, and rapid innovation to improve quality and shorter development cycles. And of course, the omnipresent costs. Imagine if engineers weren't constrained by rules obligating them to keep their work secret. How much could be achieved and how much in a short period of time. Open source has changed the hardware environment. Why open source software is a relatively well-known concept. By comparison, the role of open source hardware isn't quite as publicized. In fact, few people are aware that there are quite a few organizations offering open source hardware, which means they make all information pertinent to their products freely available, including design and schematics, bill of material and information, printed circuit board layout, data. Generally, open source software is used in the original design, which provides even more benefit. The driving ideology behind open source hardware is that anyone should have the freedom to use the device for any purpose, study how it works and make any changes, redistribute the design of the device and the device itself, enhance the design as well as the device, and make these improvements freely available to the public so they can benefit. This allows for faster development to the community. Some examples he gives is a laser sawer, a laser cutting, Semputer, a handheld computer, and an OpenSparse, a T1 multi-core processor from Sun, who has been bought by Oracle. Arduino, a multi-controller platform. Though not widespread as open source software, open source hardware has numerous advantages and is in the future. And this is one of the things that has propelled open source software. Even Microsoft is now forced to use it. Something you would have not have thought would have been possible 5 years ago. And this is basically around toolkits. But however thinly disguised it might be, the problem is there that more and more things are becoming open. We now have open smartphones that you can move from one carrier to the next. We have various Android implementations. Now, the Google Android implementation is not totally open. But there are some projects that have opened these their Android distributions up as with Linux. And that leaves a few. Apple, again, is one of those that is not open. Now, to developers, to continue with the article here, designs and prototypes is a costly endeavor and is usually the result of commercial interest. In other words, engineers develop hardware for companies that want to make money, which generally means freely distributing the design of the product is not high on the list. In fact, it's not on the list, period. While competition is a good thing, at least for consumers' point of view, much more can be achieved by adopting an open source approach, an open source model. For example, instead of two engineers working on two processes that do precisely the same thing without knowing what the other is doing, the same resource could be allocated to create one processor that far exceeds the capacity of the two. Open source hardware allows engineers to build and modify existing foundations that already have been proven effective. It permits one to focus on improvement and progress rather than wasting time reinventing the wheel. And this is one of the things we see in OpenStack and various other things that have been adopted. But we still see a consistent stance by some of these corporations to minimize the openness or the open source impact of their particular product. In other words, they'll take an open source or the result of an open source project, and they will then repackage it into a proprietary type of setup, whether it be from a GUI or whatever, add on there, and they will minimize access to it, which in effect slows the progress for the overall project. One of the projects out of Apache, which needs to change their name, is Hadoop, and you'll find that Horton works and several others that are around that particular project, and that have come out with their commercial presentations have in effect stymied the work. And part of this, what has happened there is, and it's used in the enterprise, there are other ways, better ways of doing it have challenged them. So in other words, the Duke project has not reached its full potential. And part of that is sort of like OpenStack and some others. You will see these for-profit enterprises coming in and sponsoring an open source situation. This is kind of like some of the Red Hats and others that sponsor the Linux Foundation. Well, Linux Foundation is moving on, but your problem is when you have this commercial presence in itself, it can stymie things. Now, other things out there, say for instance, Microsoft has given some source code, some tools to the open source community, and of course, it's improved upon. IBM has done a lot of this, but they still are in the old mindset. They're not freely out of that mindset. Now, in the business community, especially in financials, we saw some of that in terms of some of the open source items as opposed to some of the proprietary items that keep a company to that particular vendor. And that has been really a big, big problem. Now, open source is often considered to be the equivalent of providing something for free, which is why businesses Sean, the idea, the fact is that open source offers businesses a wide range of advantages. No doubt about that. It's sort of you get out what you put in. It is a different way of doing things. It is a collective work. We start this broadcast all the time with the late Nelson Mandela talking about the concept of Ubuntu. And you hear Ubuntu. Ubuntu is an African concept of collective work and collective responsibility for people. And he does an eloquent job of explaining this. But there is a Western concept, the proprietary concept. We're seeing this a little. We do another one here at Boston Red Network, another program, I should say, called Numbers Man, where we talk about economic trends from a macroeconomic perspective. But you're seeing more and more in terms of global economics. Via the World Economic Forum, we cover it, although it's a haven of the capitalists, and we also cover the IMF, World Bank, etc. But much of the activity now centers around a sort of unified economic policy. In other words, economic policy, excuse me, in the with the Euro Bank are in one of the European countries, whether it be Spain or in Greece, which is working on theirs. But nonetheless, the central banks are basically doing the same thing. If they are, say, for instance, dealing with deflation as opposed to inflation, and you have what is called quantitative easing, where the central banks effectively pump money into the economy. That is one of the tools, and you can look at that as basically an open source tool by many of the central banks, whether it be in China or Japan, or it was in the U.S. So in other words, they're not reinventing the wheel. And you see more and more of this as things, as economies, excuse me, become more interconnected. And this opens up the door for more and more open source type projects, on the, especially tools, under the banner of big data. Let me move on with the presentation here. Open source also brings other benefits to business. Traditional proprietary systems have been considered safe and low risk. And if you look around, one of the things we covered, the recent situation with TurboTax by Intuit out of Mountain View, California. What had happened, several consumers found that when filing their returns electronically, that they had already been filed, and they reported them to various state authorities. And thus the state authorities suspended the filing of TurboTax basically for about 24 hours. The last one to capitulate was Minnesota. And this is becoming more and more of a situation. Now, Intuit TurboTax is not open source. But at the same time, it is in the cloud in an open source environment. So security fixes were very quickly attached to it, and now they move merrily along. The federal filing was never affected by this. So when you start talking about security, many of the systems that have been compromised lately are proprietary systems. And nonetheless, they are out there. Another example he gives here is Pervice and Texas Instruments, TI. Remember when we bought a TI calculator, and before that, well, won't go back there. Pervice will release open source drivers for using Texas Instruments high-speed analog to digital converters. digital to analog converters and clock conditioners, respectively, the wide band ADCs and DCAs provide coverage beyond today's most common bandwidths. Another technical situation here, and various other stats, won't get into too much of that. Software-defined radios, another situation here, where components that have been typically implemented in hardware, that is mixers, and this is one of the things we always are interested in, filters, amplifiers, etc., instead implemented by means of software on a person's computer, embedded systems, they call them. And this Pervoice is a provider of innovative hardware and software solutions that allow for the transparent communications with any wireless signal. The company's products permit different wireless devices to communicate and to have the capacity to operate identically to dedicated wireless hardware. And one of the things popping up here, let's take a little quick little look at their website. I'll get a link up there to it. Pervoice is connecting all of your wireless devices. We build, we went over that before. And it's a leading provider of these products. The products are, our vision was that databases one day be consumed like a utility. Apart elastic days. There, our work, new and innovative, is evident by 10 patients. Not seen this project before. Given a typical conversion rate, it's difficult to see how we could build an open source business on such a targeted technology, since most great open source companies are based on billing platforms. The shift to OpenStack and Treble. In response to these challenges, we started exploring ways to fulfill our demand database vision while enhancing open source. Onward 2013, we began looking at OpenStack Treble. The OpenStack database is a service project, and it looks like it could be a good fit. We joined the OpenStack community, and we began to contribute to it. This Treble was originally developed by Rackspace and HP to power their public cloud offerings there. So, and that is where it comes from. Let me quickly go to some other items here that we've been sort of, as they say, keeping in abeyance. These are things that have come across our Twitter feed over the past, few days here, and we've had them stuck around to bring up. This is from Linux.com. Whatever happened to these Red Hat Linux distributions? Several have been around. I'd not heard of Simple MIPS. It was around in 2000. If anyone remembers it, you can give me a thing there. Mandrake Linux, we used to resell it, used to use it. Now I suppose it's in the enterprise. It's a French implementation. Mandrake lost its trademark lawsuit brought by King's Features, who for whatever weird reason felt that the Mandrake Linux infringed on their Mandrake Magician character. The ups and downs, no doubt about that. The former employee of Forked in Mandeva and created a not-for-profit organization, Mandeva.org. They're still in business selling enterprise software, no doubt about that. And there was another one that was kind of an interesting character. I actually talked to him. Linspear was what it was called. It was they sold it out of Walmart and all the things there. It was a distribution to actually take on Windows. It was headed by a character named Michael Robinson. He wanted to develop a user-friendly distribution, and they were able to sell it. And this Lynn Spear, according to this article by Mrs. Shula, call her Shula, that they paid the price. They paid, let's see what happened here. Microsoft sued them and lost, but the big bank account never really lost. So Microsoft kept suing and then offered a settlement. They paid Lindels, as they call themselves, $20 million, and got the rights to the name. So Lindels, and Lindels became Linspear. Yeah, it was Lindels, okay. Had to remember back what Robinson was doing there in 2002, 20 years ago. Over 10 years ago. So nonetheless, Linspear, click and run software is the precursor to Ubuntu. The graphical interface there was based on Debian. He got in trouble for not making the source code available. That was one of the big debates that surrounded Robinson and his whole idea there. He was trying to basically put a closed system masquerading as an open source project, and for Linux that just would not do. Generated considerable controversy in 2007 with an agreement with Microsoft, which included some documents and multimedia interoperability goals and patent covenants for Linspear. So, anyway, nonetheless, Linspear in, 2008 sort of bit the dust. The end of Linspear. And Linspear lived for 6 action-packed years. Well, they are now, as they say, not around to trouble us anymore. And what happened to Robinson? Who knows? Anybody know, drop us some and tell us what happened to Robinson. We're at Linux.com. Incidentally, Cisco helping advance open source networking last week, and this is dated the 6th of February. Cisco Cisco Live in Milan, in Italy. Also had an opportunity to speak about Open Daylight and the software-defining networks. What stood out for me, and this is by Jim Zellin, it looks like here. Joined a developer in Cisco Development Net Zone to get a look at the company's SDN and NFV software, and what I saw was a portfolio of applications based upon Open Daylight that are advancing the transition to network management by software. And by far the highest point was the Cloud VPM, which is offering an open API to allow developers to create their own applications, portables, and automations on top of the platform. Among the things I saw were Wang automation engines that can be used on in service providers' Wang networks using Open Daylight, which provides deployments and optimization functions combined with CRBAs, which enables the orchestration platform to integrate workload placement. Cool stuff, he calls it. I saw applications that create the ability to schedule bandwidth allocations that can be a powerful way to service providers and enterprises to create value from networks, a favorite business term there. The bandwidth demand application built on Open Daylight provides a simple way to calendar and provision bandwidth on demand. And the application enables networks to publish access circuit data to simple in the SDNs. Get this right here. Cisco evidently is a founding member of the Open Daylight operation, and its software demand networks, that would define the acronyms there. It's a sort of a thing that Americans like to do. So more of a move to software, and thus the move to open things up, which is one of the things that is always greeted. However, the implementation is done. Usually we start out with these sort of business open source type of implementations, quasi-implementations, and in an evolutionary situation, they move our session there. Nonetheless, they will be there, and that'll be in Barcelona, I guess, for those that make it to Barcelona. But anyway, we'll take a look at that particular project and see where they are, and look at how to participate. As is common with other open source projects, there are many ways to participate. They have a guide there, and they have something for developers. Also can participate to connect with other members of the open source. Open Daylight, you can get on a mailing list, create an account. We'll put a link there for that particular community. In the networking community, this will do it for us. We ran over time. We'll have to edit this particular version. Nonetheless, till the next open source report, this is M.A. at Cranston. Have a good day. We'll talk to you later. Keep open sourcing. Incidentally, you can go to bostonred.org and leave us a message if you have an open source project we did not cover, or to our Twitter feed at Cranston Software, are the Facebook page, which very few people stop by, but nonetheless, we are there.